Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I hope this is coming through okay. I've had some cell phone challenges again this morning. This is Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have Dr. Tim Hayes with us, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Thursday, April the 2nd, 2015. And our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. And we do already have two hands up. But first, let's welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome everybody to the show. And Jeannie, I don't know what you did, but your phone is coming through loud and clear. So that's cool. It's on track. And we're honored, delighted, and blessed by everybody that chooses to join us every day that you choose to join us. And seeing as how we've got hands up, what do you say we just go right to the questions and see what's happening?
Okay, the first one is area code. Well, they're both area code 517. So the first one's 517-281. You're on the air.
This is me, right? Tony Hendrick.
We got you, Tony. Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
We are blessed and enjoying sunshine in Gainesville, Florida, or actually High Springs.
Great. What I'm calling about today is to talk a little bit about words and the worksheet. And it was sparked by the conversation that happened earlier this week with talking about empathy or empathic, the conversation that I think happened on Monday, and I think even Friday, and maybe even Tuesday. So, and it got
right.
me thinking about, you know, what's the confusion, and seems like there's some sort of a divide in understanding there, and I went and looked up the word, the definition feeling, and I noticed that there's actually several different definitions for the word feeling. So the first definition, this is out of Webster's dictionary, feeling, an emotional state or reaction, and then a belief, then the second one is a belief, a vague irritation, or a vague or irrational one. Belief, a vague or irrational one. And then this is where I think the split kind of comes from. Then the third definition is the capacity to experience the sense of touch. And then the fourth one is a sensitivity to, or intuitive understanding of. And I started to look at, in the worksheet, where it says capacity to generate my feelings in 5B, where I say I heal my denial and my capacity to generate my feeling.
Yeah.
So I started looking at, and I know I'm just laying the foundation here, and then I'll hand it over to you to talk about, and I'm going to make a recommendation. So I looked at the word capacity, and that says maximum amount that something can contain. And then the second one, it says the ability or power to do, experience, or understand something. And then the third one is a specified role or position. So I just got to thinking about this confusion over this, and I want to get your input on what you think about the idea of using resource instead of capacity when talking about that. And here's the definition that I've got for resource, which is a stock or supply of money, material, staff, or other assets, and then an action or strategy that may be adopted in adverse circumstances. And then the other one's leisure occupation. And
could you read that one again?
The
Tony?
Third one? The third?
Yes.
Leisure occupation?
No, the one previous.
Oh, the one previous. An action or strategy that may be adopted in a diverse circumstance. So instead of saying capacity, because I'm a creator, I'm always going to have the capacity to create a resource inside of me that can be triggered and brought up and cause my feeling. So that, and then I was thinking about the word feeling, and I looked up the word emotion, and that actually only has one definition, which is a natural instinctive state of mind deriving from one's circumstances, mood, or relationships with others. And then it also says instinctive or intuitive feeling as distinguished from reasoning or knowledge. So I think, for me anyway, and then I'll just let you talk about it, emotion kind of hits the target a little more directly with what it is that I think about. And like when you say, well, outside of having somebody come up and hit me, nobody can cause me my feelings. So right there, you're also acknowledging that there's two different definitions for the word feeling. So that's my thoughts, and I'm just going to let you then talk about it.
Well, first of all, that second to last definition that you just read, that indicates that it's coming from something outside of us, is a definition based in one who lives in a world of denial. And so when I think my feelings or my emotions, whichever word you choose to use, are coming from something outside of me, I'm in denial. And being in denial, by definition, I have to dissociate from the cause of what's going on inside of me in order to hold the belief that it's happening from the outside. And, you know, I think that every person has a certain level of empathy. And that's our ability to really, you know, experience in ourselves something that matches what someone else is going through. And when that's accurate, then the reason we can experience it is because it's within us, and we can accurately assess or support somebody who's in a similar position. So, you know, if somebody stubs their toe, I can have empathy for that. I've been there. I've done that. And so, but the difference in the core of the conversation as it started was the person who proclaims that they are an empath, in that they're feeling not their own internal dynamics, but they're feeling somebody else's. And my point there is that that's just another form of denial, that I can feel what's happening inside of me. If it relates accurately to what you're doing, I can feel it because it matches what's happening in you. And as I listen in my own body, I can feel it, and I can feel it from one of two places. I've either worked through it, and I can offer some support, or I've not worked through it, and I'm in the same feeling. I'm lost in the same thing. So the idea of the, are we empathic? Yes. Are my feelings caused by something outside of me? Am I feeling someone else's feelings? No, I'm only feeling my own. So that's the core of what I was addressing the other day. Does that fit with what your thoughts and questions are?
Yeah, and I understand that. And but I've also noticed that it kind of, because of the word feeling, when it has this other definition that says a capacity to experience the sense of touch, and it also says sensitivity to or intuitive understanding of, so I can feel, I can have understanding, intuitive understanding of somebody else's feeling.
Yes, I can have an intuitive understanding of, but again, the empath, or at least some people who I've spoken to, have spoken to me and told me they're empaths, are in total denial that they've got anything to do with what they're feeling. I'm feeling everybody else's pain. Instead of, gee, when I'm in that person's presence, they resonate my pain, or my pain
right.
resonates in their presence. And so, you know, the difference between ownership and denial is, to me, the crux of the matter.
Right. And I'm totally on board with that. I'm just saying, I think some of the confusion just comes from that there's actual separate definitions for the word feeling,
right.
where it seems the word emotion does apply more specifically to that content in the mind creating the feeling inside of me, which then is either triggered by an outside source or my own thinking and thoughts. But, then, you know, talking about the word capacity, I thought that, you know, because whenever I've heard that, I've had this kind of, well, wait a minute. You know, if I'm a creator, I'm always going to, no matter how much forgiveness I've done, I can remove all the content from, or I can dissolve all the belief systems that I have and beliefs that are triggering or that are causing a particular feeling that I'm having. But I'll always have the capacity to reestablish that belief system that causes the feeling. So that's where I was thinking, well, is it more that I have a resource? I would remove the resource inside of me for creating that that feeling. Heal, you know, instead of saying heal my denial and capacity to generate my feeling, saying heal my denial and resource to generate my feeling.
Well, for me, the idea, I'll ponder that, but the idea of resource there doesn't really fit. I think that, you know, for me, what I know is that I have a history, let's say, for instance, of being able to generate anger. And, of course, I generate anger out of the content of my mind. And I'm asking to have my capacity to generate that removed so that no matter what happens, my mind does not generate that energy. Now, could I go back as a creator and say, well, I think I'll create a little rage here? I guess I could always do that. But the internal capacity to produce that when healed is going to leave me in a place where the thing that yesterday that happened that resonated that anger in me can happen, And in that situation, I don't have the capacity to generate anger. I think it would be, for me, it would be a different, you know, a refinement in the ideas to say, and I could go back and, you know, create myself a little rage here. But that would be different for me than the capacity to produce anger, because that capacity is in me. That situation shows up and resonates that in me. So for me, the word capacity still fits, and I'll just kind of hang out with the idea of resource. To me, the idea of a resource there would be, it would be very awkward to try to get people to understand that.
Right, right, yeah. I get that. Well, I had those thoughts, and I thought I'd bring them to the show, because I know the conversation was something that I think a lot of people were wanting to hear more about, and so maybe it's Rex on the other line, and he might actually talk more about the conversation that you and he had, I think, on Monday or Tuesday. I don't remember which it was.
Well, why don't we see if it is Rex and stay with us and be part of the conversation. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Jeannie?
It is Rex. 517, you're on.
Hey, welcome, sir.
Lo and behold, bingo, I made it back on the program.
Yay. And
yeah, it's been
busy. You've heard Tony's input, and I assume that you were busy yesterday and couldn't get back to talk about the conversation around the empath and such. So what's your highest thought?
Well, first to acknowledge, appreciate you calling in, Tony, and giving your input and doing a little research. It took some time to do that, so thank you. I mean, Tony and I had a great conversation in our support group. It was Mitzi was there, but just the two of us, so we opted to just, you know, discuss what was happening in our lives and support each other, and it was very enjoyable. So we were all also discussing this conversation we had. And Mitzi and I took the initiative yesterday evening and went back and listened to Friday's program, and then right in sequence listened to Monday's program, and then listened to Tuesday's program, and then listened to the first 20 minutes of Wednesday's program. And it was really nice to be able to hear all the programs in sequence, because they were kind of, much of them were about the similar topic. And first and foremost, I want to be really clear that our conversation about empath, Michael, we're in total agreement. I agree with you, and I am in agreement with that. But the conversation moves beyond that when we start what I'm wanting to discuss was what Tony was kind of bringing in, and the difference between feelings and emotions, I think, having listened to the programs again in a very, you know, objective state without any distractions, focused, what I saw is the possibility, not that this is what happened, but what I was picking up for me was the possibility that we have different ideas or definitions of the words we're using. Now, as far as empath is concerned, I'm in agreement, but I'd like to take it beyond that. I know an empath that thinks that they feel everybody else's feelings, but they aren't really, you know, feeling their own. That's just inaccurate. I mean, that's resonance, and they're definitely feeling their own feelings, and they're reacting to their own stuff and their own emotions or feelings. It's all theirs. And depending on levels of sensitivity, I think everybody has a different experience. And one of the things I heard you say, Michael, and again, I heard you say, it doesn't mean you said it, I've learned that very well, is that if we have, and I use the example of Yeshua in having moved through the pain and the sorrow, if he had, and actually reach a state of full mastery, if that in fact is what happened for him, and he was able to embrace all of the different emotional states that we have experienced in bodies, of sadness, fear, anger, hostility, whatever was there. And then when you said at the end of the program, right before we ended, when our conversation, I thought I heard you say that if he had resolved those energies in him, he could still have a memory of them, or I don't think he used the word memory, but you said that he could still have access to them, and he could feel that in relationship to it being resonated in another person. And so that, I thought it might be good to just clarify a little bit more on that. Michael, what is your definition of feelings and what is your definition of emotions and the difference? And then if we still have time, I'd like to move the conversation into the idea of perfection that you brought up the other day as well.
Around the whole idea of having empathy, when I spoke of Yeshua, or any of us for that matter, my input is that I can experience what someone resonates in me, let's say using the event of, or the energy of anger, mm-hmm. I can experience the memory that, oh yeah, man, when that used to happen, I'd go into a total fit of rage. And because I forgive my rage doesn't mean I don't remember how I experienced the energy moving in my body, which I would call my feelings, and some people call emotions. And yes, there is a distinct definition that with my fingertips I can feel something, a different definition of the word. That's one of the challenges of the English language is refining those things. But if I've worked through an issue, then I am more likely to be able to stand as a space of love for that issue while I can remember how that was for me. But if that issue shows up, it doesn't trigger how it was for me. I can simply stand in my beingness as a space of love and therefore be a fit space to support someone else in the healing of whatever that issue is. Or the second state I can experience it from is, I haven't done my work around this one, and man, I'm as peeved as you are sure. about what's happening. And of course, the mind in this denial says, I'm peeved about what's happening, which is just denial. I'm never peeved about what's happening. I'm peeved about the fact that inside of me there's peeved, or whatever, you know, other expression or other word you want to use to describe my feelings or my emotions. And so...
Yeah.
When I'm in a clear space, I can simply hold to the active presence of love. I can support somebody through that issue because been there, done that, and worked it out. Or I'm going to have difficulty supporting somebody through it because I've been there, am there, and still doing it. And that is the point I made about, being a teacher. You really got to be willing and process yourself on the spot because you're going to draw people. Each of us draws people who are going to resonate those energies that we've not yet worked out. And so you want to really be in a space of willingness and work through those issues.
Well, and I got a big smile.
Address where you're heading?
Yes. Very much in agreement with the process of as a teacher, how essential, I like the word essential for me, it is to be able to process in while I'm still carrying on my teaching, and on rare experience in the people that I work with, I have found, even if they're brand new, it's refreshing for them if something does surface. They've given me feedback that it's refreshing for them, that if something does surface to me that's so intense that I'm not able to process that energy in an instant or in a quiet moment inside myself with a deep breath and just let it go, then I found it to be a wonderful example, and I have never, I've always seen them be willing to hold the space in whatever situation in the teaching environment, which I think is just awesome. You know, I've seen you do it, Michael. I've done it. I've seen Tim do it. I've seen many, what I call quality teachers that see that they're triggered, and rather than just trying to move on, you know, and ignore it, recognize it's a moment in time and it's an opportunity to heal that, and it's very powerful. But yes, I agree. If we did that every time an issue surfaced when we're teaching, we wouldn't get any teaching done. Well, at least not outwardly. We'd get a whole bunch of teaching done inwardly, but it may not work real well for all the states that we would I would be running through, you know, in that moment. So I agree with that. As far as the feelings then, for clarification, thank you. Yeah, that did help, you know, because I realized it had been a while since I've heard you define what your experience or knowledge or definition of feelings and emotions are. So that was helpful. So to clarify then, if I have removed the charge, let's say, the issue, I have forgiven the issue in me around the anger that I had, and I can actually remember the action of anger, but to tap into the real emotion of it, what I'm finding as I let go of deeper and deeper layers, it becomes more vague. It becomes even a little ethereal that it's almost hard to even, I don't want to use the word remember, but access it fully. And so what I'm asking, again, a little bit more refinement maybe, is that if, and obviously the reason for my questions, Michael, is because I have a different experience than what I heard you communicating when you said it is not possible to feel someone else's feelings. That's the major piece that I was having and have been having difficulty with in processing that, because I've spent a large portion of my life as a professional and refining my intuition, which my experience is that I have been able to feel things and even feel what I would perceive to be an angel, as an example. And before I was able to make any kind of images in my mind, and I'm aware I'm making them up, but before I was able to recognize what I was feeling, it was just a sensory experience. And this kept happening over and over again. And you and I have talked about that, so I know on a private level we've talked about it. Well, then I would actually start to recognize, almost like, I don't know the languaging would be right, but an energy imprint as to what it was that I was sensing that I would call feeling. And I would sense the presence. And I do this on a regular basis where I'll sense the presence of a being, let's say, or what I would call more accurately an energy system that seems to have an individuality to it, call a being in another form of some kind or in a non-physical sense. And I would have an experience of that, and over time I would practice identifying what it was I was feeling. And I would do that with the non-physical world, and some people call it dimensional, you know, fourth or fifth dimensions or whatever it is. I don't really need to name it. It doesn't matter to me. But what matters is that I'm having an experience of that, and I've learned over time that I'm going to run that through my systems and interpret it. So I know I'm getting my own interpretation of it, yet I started many years ago working with people, and it is one of my greatest strengths that I'll be sitting with someone and then I'll feel, and I'll use this word consciously and intentionally, I'll feel a shift in their energy in their body. And I'll even be able to, after practicing the same way I would practice, well, what is the imprint? The way for me to be able to tell on an intuitive level, I'll call it intuitive, whether or not Journey comes into my space, and Journey is not Journey anymore. He probably never really was Journey. It was just a body we called Journey that I had a relationship with. And now he's gone back to, or he's fully embraced that divine being that he is and always has been. But in order for me to recognize it's him, it comes with a certain signature on an energy level. At least that's my perception of it, and I'll own that. And so I use that as an example, and then I have a sense that with Yishwa, and that's a little different, and Yogananda, I have that experience. And then there's a number of beings that I'll have a different experience of, much like, Michael, if you're walking into my home, I can go, oh, Michael's here, you know? I mean, there's an imprint, a feeling I get that I have a sensory experience of that. So what I did is I started refining that in working with people. And what I would do is I would ask, okay, what is it that I'm feeling? And then I would, over repetition like you, I would ask, what is your experience? I kind of picked up there was something happening there, and they would go blah, 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 blah. And more, I just became able to refine what I was feeling in my body and what I thought I was picking up in their body. And much of it is just material that isn't, I don't even have a personal experience of, and
okay, I
have very
thoughts.
Little. Okay, go ahead. Thanks.
So here would be where the distinction would be for me.
Okay.
The empath says, I'm feeling your anger. That's the only reason I'm angry is because it's your anger. That's the empath.
Right. That's just denial.
So I see the empath stays away from everybody. And I've seen, sadly, people just like, well, I just isolate from people because I feel everybody else's feelings. That is distinct from intuition. I can be aware of something going on for someone. And that's why in the conversation the other day, I said, well, you know, if I'm working with someone and I get a sense that, and I wouldn't call my getting a sense of something my feeling or feeling theirs, that would be I'm getting the intuitive hit and I'm going to check it out because I'll feed it back to you as, does that feel right to you? Is that what's happening for you? So that I don't cloud it with my own stuff. But intuiting something to me is a whole different thing from the empath saying I'm feeling everybody else's feelings. Again, my input is, you can't feel anybody else. It's just not possible. You can only feel, that is, have the energy moving in your body of that which is in your body. But you can certainly intuit what's going on for someone else, and that's a part of the process of supporting people is to be able to intuit it and then offer it, and again, offer it not as a fact but as an offering is the way I've come to do it, so that I get feedback if I'm off base. Gee, it seems to me I get the sense that, and I might call that a feeling, but I don't think it fits in our definition of the word feeling around the empath who says they're feeling everybody else's feelings. So that would be the distinction for me. I can have intuition and be aware of an energy going on. If energy is moving in my body, that's mine.
Okay, that's helpful. So if the reason I use feeling is because I remember vividly as a child, and this is before I actually, I think it was before, it was pre-verbal. So I think I added the language later. So that kind of messes things around a bit. I know we do that. But I could actually feel, this is my experience of memory, that I could feel what my family was feeling. Now, what you're saying is intuition is not to be mixed with the feeling. And my take on it is that's how I intuit, is on a sensory feeling level. So help me with that.
Well, again, I feel like Dad is angry. What I'm saying is, Dad's resonating a field. Whether it's anger or not for him, I don't know for sure. But it's resonating anger in me. I probably have a tuning fork that matches his, so that's what's moving, and good chance I'm accurate. But I'm still experiencing what's happening inside of me from what's resonating out of what he's experiencing. And that would be, for me, distinct from intuition.
So
intuition intuition doesn't cause an emotional energy to move in my body. Unless I have an emotional energy in my body or my energy field that matches what my intuition is giving me. And if it does, that's my work to do. I don't have any business talking to them about what's happening for them. Yeshua said, you know, why are you trying to take the speck out of your brother's eye while you have a beam in your own? So as the child, I would say, if what's moving in me is anger, and I say, oh, I feel like my dad's angry, I'm feeling what's happening in my family, then my work would be that I'm going to clean that up and be the space of love. And so I would suspect that that would fit more, you know, when I'm a child, I'm experiencing what's happening in my own tuning forks, my own resonant field, that and the energies that I've genetically inherited from my family, and there's going to tend to be a match. And,
well,
you know,
again,
as you've grown beyond that, notice that when that anger's come up in you, there have been times when you've just taken a hold of it and you've done your next level of work and cleared it out and cleared it out and cleared it out and cleared it out.
Well, and I think what I was articulating, thank you, I was articulating the part about pre-verbal, because what my memory is of having a sense of my environment as if it was, I have a memory, I'll call it a memory, I don't know what else to call it, Michael, but a recollection or something, an awareness that was really young, that I was aware of what was happening in my environment on a feeling level, because I didn't have any words for it. I didn't have that's anger or that's sadness or that's this or that's that. And how I'm able to experience it today is quite often like that. And it's a more of a sensory experience that I have called a feeling because I don't really know what else to call it. And I'm able to experience something that I could put in the box of feeling. And as an intuitive thing, what you said, I thought, was that I don't feel things intuitively, or I don't get intuition on a feeling level.
I can.
But that's,
I can. I can intuit something.
If it resonates.
And that
right?
which I intuit resonates something in me, and emotional energy moves in my body that's mine.
Okay, I got that.
And when you talk about, you know, as a child, I could sense that. That, to me, would be a word that describes your intuition operating, not your tuning forks operating.
So is there, in your experience then, is the intuition something that you feel in your body, or does it come across as an intellectual piece? I mean, how do you define that or express that?
When we do intuitive development, we work through all kinds of exercises to get intuition functioning from many different directions, many different senses coming into the process. And so as I shared the other day on the show, you know, I'd be working with someone and I'd feel this energy moving in my body, in my, let's say, my belly. And I would check in, is this something that is simply a disturbance in me, or am I having tuned into this person picking up on a disturbance for them? And so what I would do is I would then say, well, you know, I get a sense by what's moving in my structure, I get a sense that perhaps there's something going on in your stomach. Is there? And if they said yes, then I'd have verification that, okay, that's happening. Now, if I had that sense and I'm really peeved about it, but I'm feeling what's going on in your belly, that's my stuff. That's my work to do. The empath would deny if that's moving in their belly and it's anger or it's fear or whatever it is, would say, well, have you got something going on in your belly? Yes, I do. Well, I'm feeling it. It's like, no, I'm not feeling it. But through resonance, there's an energy shifting around in my structure that gives me a way of intuiting that. Now, when we do intuitive development, we have people who do, or we have exercises where people go in and they use the visual, you know, let yourself picture it. They use the auditory. You know, you can use every channel to receive information. And the difference is, does it filter through my carbon-based memory, which would be the psychic realm, or does it arrive in my structure without reference to carbon-based memory? Without coming through my so-called body's mind. And so I intuit, or I sense. I would use the word sense there, similar to intuition. Well, I sense that there's something moving in your belly. Is there? Is there something? Is there a disturbance going on there? Now, I just felt a flip in my belly. There's no disturbance here. It's just, you know, I felt an energy going on in me, but it didn't move any particular emotion. And so I would use that as a signal to ask the question. And if I got feedback, they said, no, everything's fine in my belly. I said, oh, okay, well, there must be something in me. You know, maybe I ate the wrong combination of foods or something. But otherwise, I'd use that as a lead-in to have somebody check out their structures. And it might be in the neck or the brain or, you know, wherever it is in the structure. But if I, in that situation, if that sense or that intuition resonates some sort of pain or trauma on me, my point is, that's me, that's my work to do. The empath says, no, that's not me, that's not mine, that's not my work to do. That's theirs. I'm feeling everybody else's.
Yeah, and we could call it anything. Yes, what you go back to with the empath piece, we could call it anything. I mean, anybody who's in denial will use any excuse they can to, or when we're in denial and we're not aware of it, will come up with any kind of excuse. And I love the idea of a person who said, hey, I'd like to borrow the lawnmower. And the person looks at him and says, no, I'm hanging up my clothes in the backyard. And he says, well, what's it got to do with borrowing the lawnmower? Absolutely nothing. But I just don't want to loan you my lawnmower, so it's just an excuse. So it's like that with denial. We're going to be in denial. We could use that we're empath. We could use that we're, you know, psychic, we're this, we're that. But the fact is, if I'm feeling an emotion that I have a trigger with inside me, and if I'm having an experience of it, and I am in judgment in one form or another, I am actually in denial, and I agree. And I know that, and I agree with that. And I appreciate our conversation moving in the direction it is, because it helps to look at how the words that we use, and I've been working diligently on that, and Tony's really, he and I have been working with it and playing with that, and I find that when we're able to have a common definition, that I comprehend what your definition is, and then I'm able to put it with mine, and I can see where there's a communication that's pretty close, if not the same, you know. And so I can just accept our conversation and move forward with it and appreciate the communications that we're having. The one part that helped is when you use the word sense, you kind of differentiate that from a feeling. And it's almost like they're different frequencies. A sense is something that can just come through like the wind blowing on my cheek. I'll have a sense of that touching my cheek, but I may not have a feeling that I associate to it or link to it. And
yeah, you know, taking that example of Dad being angry. So mm-hmm. I'm upstairs in my room, and I get a sense that Dad's angry. Like I'm picking up this energy. And then I listen closely, and I hear this loud voice rocking away. And I go, my sense was right. And if I said, now I'm feeling really nervous and I need to get out of here, that's about me. That's my feeling. Resonated by my sense or my intuition. Gee, you know, I had no reason to think Dad was angry, except I just had that sense. My intuition is picking up on that. And so that would be the distinction for me.
That's a good refinement. I like that refinement.
So,
thank you.
Let's
cool.
check in and see
well,
what Tony's thinking at this point. Sir?
Please, yeah.
How's this conversation fitting for you? You have any thoughts to add?
Yeah, just bingo. That's exactly what I was referring to with Rex. I had listened to the show, I guess the Monday show, and I was like, you know, I think you and Michael are in total agreement, and I think that's been illustrated here by your conversation. And I think just the thing that was creating some sort of a idea that there was some difference in what you were talking about is just the use of the words. And I did notice that you, when you were, you know, refining the differences, you also went to the use of the word emotional when describing a feeling that has a charge and you know, or the sense that has a charge and all the conversation that you had. So that's where I was just pointing to the word emotion seems to not have that confusion that when the definition of feeling has four different definitions.
Right, well, and I think you know, if you go back, Plato said, let me define the words and I'll end the argument. Where there's an argument,
yep,
it's because there's a change in the definition of words. And then Vladimir Lenin in his communist writing says, if you want to destroy a culture, just change the meaning of its words. And when,
yep,
that happens, we cut off all communication. Jeannie and I traveled in 7 countries last year, and when we were in Sweden, was the first country we were in, and I'm listening to people speak Swedish, and they understand each other. And I sit there, and I didn't know a thing they were saying. Then we went to Denmark, and the Danes are speaking Danish, and they understand each other. And I didn't know one thing they were saying. We went to Italy, and the Italians speak Italian, and they understand each other. And Jeannie and I would speak to each other in English, and we understood each other. And what struck me is, all of this is babble. And you go to that idea of the Tower of Babel. Everyone went away from the Tower of Babel speaking a different language. And when I say a different language, I don't mean French, Italian, German, you know, Swedish, Danish, but rather everyone went away with different brain cells firing in response to words. And so each group of people that created a language created babble. Right now we're babbling. We're speaking babble. You and I happen to have similar brain cells, so we can kind of communicate about it. I think there's only one language on the planet that isn't babble. And this language, it's even right down to its letters, are actually based in the atomic structure of the universe. The shape of the letters is a 3D shadow of the movement of atoms in the periodic table of the elements. It is based in the actuality of the Earth. And I think that's one of the reasons why at least 6 of the world's major religions came out of the Aramaic. It wasn't babble. If you understood it, you had an understanding of how the universe worked. We try to bring it into English, but really, in truth, we're babbling, and that's why you'll often hear me say, don't believe a word I've got to say, take the tools, use them, and have your direct experience. When everybody has their direct experience, then they're out of the game of babble, although we can go back into babble again, because we've all been taught to speak, you know, this babble language, English or German or Russian or whatever it happens to be. And whoever controls the language controls the world, because language, words, control thought. You know, one of the most dastardly events in all of history, I believe, is that in the Aramaic, there was an understanding that told people or gave people a tool with which to remove every virus in their mind, every form of hostility or fear. The word was forgive. And in order to transfer the understanding of something, you know, as humans, we tend to transfer understanding through words. And when they changed the word forgive from a tool with which you go inside yourself and remove the viruses that destroy your human life or that obscure your human life, when that word was changed to the Greek idea of pardoning, oh, I have something painful moving in me, but it's your fault, I'll let you off the hook. I think that's one of the most disastrous word changes that ever happened, because we lost the ability, and that's what I'm working to reestablish with this Aramaic idea of forgiveness. I've had people say, well, why don't you just call it shebagging and forget forgiveness, because you got to change people's minds. Yes, but we have a whole history and a state of being that comes from a language that's rooted in the earth, that's rooted in the elements and the elemental forces. And so when we lost the meaning of the word forgive, we lost the ability to use words to describe to someone a tool with which they could remove every bit of hostility and fear from their structures. That was gone. And it's been gone for almost 2,000 years. And that's what we're working to reestablish. That single word, I think, is the changing of the meaning of that word, a la, you know, Vladimir Lenin and his definition of how to destroy a culture. The reason that, you know, our divorce rate in America is 50% or so, the reason that fathers kill mothers and mothers kill fathers and mothers kill children and children kill parents and people kill each other and we do war and all the insanity and all the poverty, the fact that we have millions of tons of food that goes into the ocean every year thrown away while there are children starving, I think that's all because of that one word change. We forgot that there was a tool with which we could remove our hostility and fear, and we began to function as non-human structures, as non-humanoids, who could do things inhuman to each other. And if you look at the inhumanity that's going on the planet, it's only there because that's what's been structured into people's minds through the incorrect use of words. And so when we, you know, get that tool back into people's hands, human life is restored, and those atrocities disappear. So the words are definitely a big key in the process. That's what, you know, Laws of Living is all about. It's so much is focused on words and the Aramaic words and their meanings and the tools.
Yeah, and for me too, if I personally have an attachment to a word, because a word ultimately is just a pointer to something. So if I'm, I use this example with Rex, if I'm so attached to me being Tony, which I'm not, but if I'm so attached to it and I'm in Mexico and somebody, like when I was a child and I was in the road and my parents yelled, "Tony, get out of the road, car's coming." That was a useful thing for me to identify myself with being Tony. But if I'm down in Mexico and somebody yells, "Gringo, get out of the road, the car is coming," and I'm so attached to being Tony that I refuse to hear that they're pointing to me with another word, then I'm going to have an issue or I'm going to have a problem. So at the same time that, you know, words are important too, that I think people can use different words to point to the same thing. So, and I think that's what was kind of going on with the conversation between you and Rex. And it's just nice to be able to talk and get further understanding of the words that we have hold in our mind and what we're pointing to.
Awesome.
All right.
Cool. Thanks, Tony and Michael.
Yep.
I'll bring up the conversation on perfection. We have more time, and maybe our conversation has spurred someone that might want to raise their hand, and Jeannie might have an opportunity that we could support someone in their own healing process. So I thought I would just kind of go on mute and then see if that's available. If not, I'm willing to talk more or share more and have a conversation. But let's check that maybe, Michael. What do you think?
All right. We do have somebody that Jeannie's got some input from. So let's turn it over to Jeannie.
Awesome.
Your phone's decided to cut out. Here, let me bring mine over there. We're out on this farm where these folks are growing these awesome water lilies that are just amazing. And so I'm going to hand, we're sitting in different parts, but I'm going to just hand. And here.
Okay, this isn't necessarily about what you all were talking about, but Nene had sent me a text early saying that she wanted to share something on the show, and she's in the chat room, and she says, "I can't call in, but I wanted to say that I have been watching The Empowered to Heal, and I've gotten a new level of understanding to intensify my time, attention in the embodiment of love, Rachma, and create more of the truth within us. I'm cleaning the database. After doing still point breathing, I had a wonderful experience with an ex-boyfriend. We were able to talk about our experience, and I guess I became a safe space to express truth. He says that lately I have become, quote, a desirable package, unquote, in his eyes, and he can't understand why he feels so good and happy when he's around me. He regrets being away from me. He's now in another relationship, but he did want to tell me how sweet and nice I am for him. It was a great to experience him now telling me those words after 3 years. That's when they broke up 3 years ago. I'm pleased, and I did my worksheet, and some energies were triggered. Worksheet number 3105. And hold on, I'm going to scroll. Um, And then she says, announcement, the last weekend of each month I will be doing the Reality Management Support Group in Coral Springs with Maritza and Hugo. And then she's going to send me the email with the correct address and things. So it'll be Wednesday of each month at 7:30, both in English and Spanish. And for anybody interested, her phone number is 954-607-9539. And that's in Coral Springs.
Repeat it again.
954-607-9539. And it's consistent spiritual work that has made the difference in her.
Congratulations, Danae. That's awesome. Looks like the universe is giving you some sweet feedback about what your work is producing for you. That's very cool. And our call-in number, of course, is 646-200-4169. Is there anything else happening in the chat room, Jeannie, for us to be aware of, or anybody else with a hand up in the phone queue? Looks like we've got, say again. Okay, area code. Okay, there was a caller with their hand up, Jeannie said, and all of a sudden they disappeared. So if you put your hand back up, Jeannie will be able to turn you on and we'll get to your question. We've got another, what have we got, 3 or 4 minutes? So we do have, we're actually down to about 2 minutes. So, okay, so the hand come back up? No. Okay, well then in that case, we'll just offer that we'll be in Gainesville, Florida, on the 12th, 13th, and 14th, doing a free series of workshops. And we will then be moving down to Orlando, where we'll start a 9-day, why is this happening to me again? And concurrently, Jeannie will do a 9-day Healing the Whole Woman. So we'll do those two workshops in parallel with each other in this really sweet space called the Heritage Park Inn in Orlando, Florida, where we're training some of the staff of the inn in this work, where they're bringing the work forward into a space that makes it available to more and more people. And so we'll be in Orlando doing those 2 9-day intensives concurrently. So if you'd like to take your work to the next level, get in touch with us. And, of course, you can go to the website and just click on the contact information there, phone number's there. And the 9-day, when it's complete, there'll be some people who'll be there just for the 9 days, and then they'll be heading back home. And then we'll move into a 3-day class, the first time we've done this, on understanding and interpreting the personal code evaluation, something we've got that's becoming digitally available. And so we'll be doing 3 days on that, and then we'll go into a full 9-day teacher training. So for those who want to either deepen their experience of the forgiveness tools and the forgiveness process, or who want to teach the work, then we'll be doing that 9-day teacher training. If one wants to do the 9-day teacher training, it's a prerequisite that they've done either Jeannie's Healing the Whole Woman or Why Is This Happening to Me Again. That's the precursor. And so if you want to do teacher training and you haven't done either of those, then you could just come and do the whole 20-day. Or if you've done one of those, then you can come and do the 9-day or 12-day teacher training, including the personal code evaluation. Or we have, and I don't have it in front of me, but there's some special prices for those who've done the 9-day previously who want to redo it. There's a discount for people who want to redo that. So we invite you to come and or take a look at the website, www.whyagain.org, and you'll see the schedule there, and bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.